say this, and let's be really clear about this, we are not looking for a balance. We're not looking for a balance. Lots of things in life benefit from a balance. Balanced diet, great. Balanced budget, great. This is not one of those things. The idea is not that we try to be 50% spirit and 50% truth. It's that we fully embrace both 100%. That's what we're after. And it's important because balance implies that the two things are at odds or you don't want to overdo one of them. But that's not the case. We want to be totally both things because they're both great things, spirit and truth. The problem is that on their own, in isolation, neither of them ends up being very helpful. If you just worship in spirit, you'll have loads of passion and energy and warmth, but you will end up worshipping a God of your own invention who just happens to be very similar to you in everything that he thinks, coincidentally. If you just worship in truth, you will intellectually agree with loads of great things, but it will be utterly lifeless and go nowhere, and before long, you will begin to suspect that the true object of your worship is your own brain. That's what will happen. But put them together, spirit and truth, wow. And just imagine if we really move forward in this. Imagine if our worship was more and more that inner heartfelt praise directed to the God that we know from the Bible and who we came to in complete honesty. But don't imagine it because it would be a nice experience for you. Imagine it because it would honor the God that it's directed to. Because that's the heart of this. Jesus calls us to worship in spirit and truth, but the critical thing in the passage is the object of that worship. Look at the three phrases he uses in this passage. You will worship the Father. True worshippers will worship the Father. The kind of worshippers the Father seeks. Worship is all sorts of things, but the primary thing is who it's for. Is it for yourself? Is it for other people? Or is it for God? And that's how you know whether it's Christian worship or something else. It's about the audience, not the activity. If you sing out of love for God, it's worship. If it's for others, it's performance. If it's for yourself, it's karaoke. Similarly, if you think about the sermon, and you can get into the sermon to know God more, it's worship. If it's for others, it's showing off. And if it's for yourself, you're a nerd and you need to get out more. But in light of all this, we must not forget the last line of our passage. The woman said, I know that the Messiah called Christ is coming. When he comes, he will explain everything to us. Then Jesus declared, I, the one speaking to you, am he. And she says, okay, Jesus, that's fine. Yeah. Great opinions you've got on worship. But what we really need is for the Messiah to come. And the Messiah was the person that the Old Testament predicted. Everyone looked forward to him. God's intervener, going to sort the world out. The Jews and the Samaritans both agreed on that. They both thought that. And she's saying, yeah, great stuff. But we all know, don't we? You know, if we're all about worshiping, we want to do worship, we need this Messiah figure. And then Jesus just says, I am he. It's me. And the last line is huge because it means Jesus isn't just another person sharing an opinion about worship. It means he's the one sent from God to tell the world all about worship. He doesn't have opinions about God. He has the truth about God. And the worship that the Father seeks is heartfelt, it's thoughtful, but our ability to do those things is always limited. None of us is capable of forgetting ourselves entirely and giving ourselves to God in worship. We're too selfish and distractible and pernickety. We're too into our place and our tribe and our tradition. So the same Father who loves our worship knows and loves us enough to send not just the Messiah to tell us about worship, but one who is his Son and demonstrates worship and truth in his life and death on our behalf. Because of him, even our imperfect, flawed, messy worship delights the Father that it is for. And that's precisely what we need if we're going to worship. I can't even get it together to score the perfect goal. Remember that from earlier? Once, with a bit of luck. So how am I going to consistently bring my mind and heart to worship God? I can't do it. But it's been done for me. Always the human temptation, even if we're well-intentioned, is to go after greater experiences or greater knowledge, both good things. But God transcends both of them and says, look, I'm going to give you a person. You can't do it with experiences and knowledge. I'm going to give you a person. That's the thing that you need. And it's through him, not place or tribe or tradition, that we see how to worship and who to worship. So what might be some things that we can do with this? A few kind of applicable thoughts. Firstly, do you know yourself? Do you know how you naturally worship, what your preference is? And do you know that that's okay? It's okay to worship in the style that you like to worship. I used to feel when I was younger, a bit like I was inferior when I was around other Christians because loads of my friends were really expressive in worship and I wasn't. But I came alive in a Bible study. It's just me. Do you know it's totally okay to worship more naturally in some ways than others? It's how God made you. Whether it's studying or playing the drums or praying earnestly or appreciating creation, whatever form of worship you love the most, it's brilliant when it's done in spirit and truth and it's directed to the Father. Style doesn't matter. Next, how would you benefit from appreciating ways of worship that are not your natural thing? You don't need to become a different person, but why not just have a go worshiping in a slightly different way? Why not open yourself up to something that's not normally you and just seeing what that does, seeing what happens? Third, how could you appreciate those who worship differently to you? I'm convinced it's a mark of maturity as a Christian to be able to appreciate somebody who worships the same God in a very different way from you. Could you speak some words of appreciation to someone who's different from you in how they worship? That could be a really positive thing. But the big question, who's it for when you worship? Who's it for? Only you know. I can't tell by looking at you what you're worshiping or who it's for. I might be able to have a guess sometimes, but I don't know. That's between you and God. So we're going to end our corporate worship today by singing, and I want to encourage you in this. Worship passionately, engage your emotions, devote yourself to God, but also engage your mind, think about what we're singing and why we're singing it, and let's move further towards being worshippers in spirit and truth who worship the Father.